This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's September 4th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Howdy.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, please call at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. And you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. Well, it's that time of year again. It's that time of year where we are up here on the lovely University of Connecticut campus here in Storrs, Connecticut. And there's bicycles on the sidewalks, and it just drives me a little nuts. So if you happen to be listening, or if you know someone who rides their bicycles on the sidewalks, I know it's legal in Mansfield because I am part of Bike Mansfield, and I know that there was, it was basically decided that it would be okay to ride bicycles on sidewalks. Not my opinion, but anyway. That's what was decided. So the town of Mansfield does allow riding of bicycles on sidewalks. Very few towns allow it, but just so you know, the town of Mansfield does. Here's the thing. If you're going to ride your bicycle on the sidewalk, ride at pedestrian speed. You're going to kill someone. You're going to hurt someone badly. You're going to knock them over. You're going to flip off of your bicycle when you catch somebody. It's not a good scene. So if you feel you must use your bicycle on the sidewalk, could you please just bring it down to pedestrian speed? Because bicycles are vehicles. They really don't belong on sidewalks. You don't see cars driving around on sidewalks. Cars are vehicles also, especially in the state of Connecticut. That's how everything is deemed, and pretty much every other state in our country. So bicycles, sidewalks, and pedestrians, my rant of the week. We love pedestrians. We love people on bicycles. But we are not particularly fond of when they happen to meet one another because they are riding on an area that is not useful for both of them to be sharing. That's the best I can do. All right. If you have any further discussion on this, please go to my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk, and let me know how you feel about this. On a positive side, this is a Fran thing, because Fran and I went out last weekend. And because it was Labor Day weekend, and we got a chance to go out and ride our bicycles on the rail line, on the rail trail. And we rode the airline trail from our house into Willimantic. And then we rode from there up to, we ended up connecting with the Hop River Trail. And the Hop River Trail, the connection has always been interrupted by, or has been interrupted for many, many years, by a road surface. Route 66, a state road. And it's got a fairly wide shoulder, and that's all well and good. But the reason it was like that is because there was a bridge that had to be constructed. And it is behind a business called Mackey's, which is a farm and garden center. And there's a brand new parking lot there. There is a trailhead entrance there right now where it connects right on through. And the bridge is now open going over the,
yes.
That would be the Willimantic River, I yes. think, at that end. And it's gorgeous.
Yes.
It's gorgeous.
Really
they did a great
nice.
Job. And there were a lot of people on it.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw a lot of people out there. Now, once you get over that trail, you're in Columbia. Once you cross over the river, you're now in Columbia. And there's a short section that still needs to be fixed between there and King's Road in Columbia.
Right.
But the positive part of this is that trail actually is rideable, walkable, and you can take it to Flanders River Road, and
right.
then you're only on the road for a short period of time, and you're on a quiet back road. And you take that up to King's Road, and off you go. And then the other positive thing on this, another positive side thing, is that the last little piece of the trail in Columbia from where the Route 6 highway goes through on back to King's Road was always rough and rumbly. And
yeah.
it's fixed. It's all finished off and fixed. So that's my positive side today, talking about the Hop River State Park Trail. Hop River State Park Trail is a Connecticut rail trail. It winds for about 20.8 miles eastward from Colonial Drive in the town of Manchester to the Airline State Park south in the town of Windham. The trail parallels to the Hop River for much of its length. So 20-mile trail, open for business. The only thing it's missing is that one bridge. I tried to bring Fran across the bridge. That was probably not one of brilliant ideas.
So right now there's two situations. You have so you go over that gorgeous new bridge. Then when you get to the other side, you can there's a fork in the road. Basically, you can go on a rather it's really not maintained yet. There's a path that will take you to Flanders River Road. And then you get on Flanders River Road, as you said, and you ride on Flanders River Road and you make a left on Kings Road, and then you pick up the Hop River Trail going west. And as you said, that part was always very crumbly and rumbly, and now it's been fixed and all the way to there, which is very exciting. But the way the rail trail is supposed to go is that there's a tunnel under what is that tunnel under? Is it under Route 66?
No, that tunnel goes under Flanders River
Flanders
Road.
Flanders River Road. Yeah. So there's a tunnel under Flanders River Road, and that's where the trail really goes.
Yeah.
And that's what you took me on. So we went on that through that tunnel, and there was like rail ties, and there's really no path. And then we got to old rotting railroad bridges where you could see through the slats, and you weren't sure if the bridge was going to hold even. So I couldn't even make it across the bridge.
It was an adventure. I took you for an adventure.
So
aren't you glad you did it? Because now you can talk about it.
Now I can talk about it. But the thing is, so what I'm wondering is, are they going to complete that section of trail so you don't even have to do Flanders River Road?
Yes.
So they're going to have to fix all the. There's a couple of bridges they have to fix.
Right. One's a very short bridge, and that'll probably just be a wood plank bridge, I would think. Like there is north of there if you're going up towards Bolton.
Right.
There's a short piece like that off of it's just where a stream goes underneath.
Right.
But the big one needs a serious bridge. And I think there's a problem with that bridge, too. I think that it doesn't sit level anymore.
Uh-huh.
And
so they're gonna have to rebuild the whole bridge.
They got a lot to work on there. They're going to have to shim up the one side because it tilts a little off to the side. I don't know if you noticed that or not. But
I was too busy.
It was really exciting. And I haven't been back there in years. They had it all fenced off for a long time. They had a big 12-foot fence, so you couldn't even get in there. And that's gone because they've obviously been back there surveying and working on it and looking at what they have to do. But years ago, I used to ride my cyclocross bike across that all the time. It was just kind of those old rotty bridges.
Oh,
they
lovely.
Weren't as rotted 40 years ago as they are today.
Now
they got 40 more years worth of rot on them. So there's definitely some sketchy. It's just the ties that are rotted.
Rode on them 40 years ago?
Yeah.
1978 was 40 years ago, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right. That's correct. That's correct.
The 70s was 40 years ago.
I was a younger man then.
I know.
Nothing got in our way. If we were on our cross bikes, this was long before mountain bikes ever became even a thought or an action. And so, we just rode our cross bikes. Wherever it was really difficult, we rode our cross bikes.
There weren't mountain bikes?
No.
When were mountain bikes invented?
They came in the 80s.
So they didn't even exist?
Not really.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you'd have to, you should look that up, the beginning of the mountain bike.
When were mountain
You'll
bikes
read then? About Cunningham and Ritchie and all the crazy people that...
Cunningham and Ritchie?
Yeah, Cunningham. These are two last, they're two last names. I know, it's funny, Ritchie Cunningham, I know, very funny. But anyway, the pioneers of the mountain bike business, Chris Chance, Fat City Cycles, he's another one. There were a lot of people that were from that era that... where basically they were taking cruiser bikes, single-speed cruiser bikes, and they were hauling them up to the top of mountains in California and riding them downhill as fast as they could.
Oh.
And they would go down like these downhill dirt roads, auto roads that went up to the top of mountains. And that's where the whole mountain bike thing kind of started.
So get this.
Yeah.
Joe Breeze is normally
credited.
Joe Breeze
is another one, yes.
He was credited with introducing the first purpose-built mountain bike in 1978. And your friend Tom... Ritchie made frames for a company called Mountain Bikes, a partnership between Gary Fisher, Charlie Kelly, and John Fry, Marin County mountain biking innovator, and your friend Tom Ritchie, because your favorite bike is your Ritchie.
I love my Ritchie. I love my Ritchie cross bike. Yeah. If Tom's listening, cool. Yeah, I worked for Tom for a few years, and I also worked for ASI, and ASI was selling Breezer bikes. So I've met them all. I've met all these guys. And what was really cool was I was at the North American Handbuilt Bike Show in Hartford. Remember that?
We went
there.
No, I don't remember.
And yeah, you do. So I'm talking to Chris Chance, who is, by the way, from Storrs, Connecticut, right here. Yeah. That's where Chris grew up here.
Does he say ride fast, take chances?
I don't know.
He's probably one of the many people who has said that.
There are so many chance jokes that go along with poor Chris's name. shout out to Chris if you're listening. But we don't mean to make fun. But anyway, Chris grew up right here, and Chris started working for Whitcomb USA, which was owned by Sports East in East Haddam. And eventually what spun off of that is he spun off of that doing his mountain bike thing and road bike thing in Boston. And Richie Sachs and Peter Weigel both ended up doing their things right here in Connecticut. And they're all, you know, fairly well-known frame builders. If you're into the whole bicycle world, they're kind of a big deal. And I know them all. This is my era. That's where I came from. I came from that craziness. And, you know, Whitcomb USA has since gone away. That ended up closing up shop. And when it did, that's when Richie Sachs went off and did his own thing over in Chester, Connecticut. And when Peter did his thing in East Haddam, he was actually building out of a pontoon hut, a Quonset hut. At the East Haddam Airport. It's kind of fun. So, yeah, I go all the way back to those times. Long, long time ago. But anyway, so that's that mountain. Yeah, we used to ride our cross bikes like mountain bikes, and people would look at us like we were strange. And then we would, a handful of my friends and I, showed up to the first, quote-unquote, mountain bike race. And we showed up with our cyclocross bikes, and they said, no, you can't ride those here. And we said, why not? It's a bicycle. It has pedals. It has gears. It has wheels, you know. And they go, all right, you can do it. And we proceeded to take, there were three of us, we proceeded to take first, second, and third place in the race. And then they told us we could never come back with them again.
What?
Well, cyclocross bike is a faster bike. And when you get into particularly tricky areas, you know, the mountain bike has its advantages. There's no question about that. But the cross bike, you know, if you're an old cross bike guy like me, you just dismount the bike, throw it on your shoulder or pick it up and run through it and then get back on when it's rideable again. And it's just a different mentality. And it's a different discipline. I guess we'll call it that. That sounds like a good thing. So anyway, the Mackey's Bridge is open. The Hop River Trail is now extended just a little bit farther. It's really, really exciting. You're so, so close now. You're only on the road for less than a mile by the time you hit the connection between the two now. And you never have to go out onto a busy road, which is very, very cool. So I'm very excited about that. That's my positive side this week. The maintenance minute this week, I am going to talk about chain cleaning. If you're a frequent rider using your bike several times throughout the week, your bicycle will benefit from a regular cleaning and lubrication of the drivetrain. We've talked about lubing the drivetrain before on this show. Bicycle, some recommend cleaning and lubricating the bike drivetrain at least once every month to maintain optimal performance and protection. Okay. There's two schools here. There's good old pedal and run old school, which I will cop to it. I am definitely an old school guy. And then there are people who are a little more fanatical with, you know, chain cleaning. They really, really like to have their chains cleaned. My friend Doug, whose bike you could eat off of, I often think of his bike because his bike is gorgeous. It's like there's not a spot of dirt or anything on it. And I think he's one of those people who cleans his bike pretty regularly. But, you know, he's a body shop guy, too. Everything has to look right. You know, it's his thing. And no fault to you if you do it. But my feeling is, and you gotta go digging way back to the Sheldon Brown days on this one. And Sheldon would talk about this too. If you clean your chain, like really soak your chain in a tank where you're with solvent and all that, you're gonna eventually kind of break down some of the lubricants that are deep inside the chain and in the rollers. Now, you can get that lube back in there again, but you really should be soaking the chain in the lubrication really kind of overnight before then putting it back on your bike, or else that lubricant has now been replaced by solvent, and that solvent will eventually eat away the lubricant that you put on the chain. So I'm a big, big believer, if you do clean your chain, be sure you really, really clean it well. So after you've done solvents on your chains and you get done with all that, you kind of need to clean it all out with soapy water, because you need to get the solvent off the chain so that then when you put the lube on, the lube stays put. Because lube has a certain amount of solvent in it, which helps draw the lube into the inside of the chain. But it's so the question is, how much is too much? And that's part of what the maintenance minute. Is it possible to over-clean a bike chain? That's the maintenance minute. What should I do about that? So the question is that the answer comes out, in various places. It depends really on whose opinion you listen to. And that's really what it comes down to. The best thing is the fact that you're lubing your chain. Let's back this up to the point where the most positive part about this is the fact that you want to be lubricating your chain. Riding around with a dry chain is not good. It will wear your drivetrain out quicker, and it will be noisy. And if you're riding with your old pal Peddlin' Ron, he is going to tell you that your chain is talking to you, and talking is that noise that the chain makes when it's pretty dry, and you can hear the actual chain. Especially as you're putting extra pressure on it, climbing a hill or accelerating, you can hear it, there's an audible kind of a buzzing noise that it makes as you're pedaling, without trying to make noises on the radio here. When your chain reaches a point where it is desperate and its personality screams out to you and it starts crying, that's when you hear the squeaks. That squeak is a metal-on-metal noise. It's metal-on-metal without lubrication. That is not something you should be hearing from the drivetrain of your bicycle. So it's really important. Now, I have a short article here. I've seen it suggested that cleaning a chain too often or too thoroughly is bad for it, and that it removes lubricant from the innermost parts of the chain where it's most needed and most difficult to replace. The KMC chain website in particular claims that using a bath-type chain cleaner will instantly ruin the chain. That's from KMC, the manufacturer of the chains. Okay, so for all you folks that are doing that, you might want to consider something else. On the other hand, here we go. Sheldon Brown, the infamous and classic Sheldon Brown, may he rest in peace. Sheldon's article on chain maintenance doesn't mention this at all, but it suggests that fresh lube is quite capable of penetrating through to the pins and the inner surfaces of the rollers. This seems plausible, as long as any excess degreaser and as much water as possible is removed. Back in the day when I was actually pulling chains off and really getting meticulous about cleaning them and doing all that, I would hang the chain outside after I washed it all down with soap and water and all that. I would hang it outside in the sun and then let the sun evaporate any extra water that might be on the chain from the soapy bath that I gave it afterwards. And then I would relube. But when I would relube the chain, I would immerse it in lubrication and just let it hang out there for a while, so it would be a lot happier. So the question is there any evidence to suggest that overcleaning is harmful to chains? And the answer is debatable. Okay, so Everybody has an opinion on this. What's your opinion? Why don't you put your opinion down on Bicycle Talk on Facebook? I would love to hear what you have to say. Or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. What's your feeling about cleaning chains with solvent and really getting them shiny, clean, and beautiful all the time? Because shiny, clean, and beautiful looks nice, and you don't end up with a Cat 5 tattoo on your leg either. But anyway... my feeling is, and what I do is I have a particular lubricant that I really, really like. It is a Bochiel product. It's called T9, and I think it's one of the best lubes out there. A lot of people think it's too messy. It's a combination of paraffin and oil is basically what it is. I usually, if my chain is starting to look pretty grimy and dirty and it needs some work and cleaning, I actually clean it with a rag that is soaked in BoShield. So I actually use the solvent that's in the BoShield to clean my chain with, therefore not ever really taking any lubrication off the chain. Or as I'm cleaning the chain and getting all the grime off on the dirty old rag, I am still I'm still bathing the chain in lubricant. So that's my way of doing it. Everybody has their own way of doing it. But you can effectively get your chain very, very clean by doing that and not, you know, digging in really deep into the rollers and pins of the chain and harming the chain in any way. My opinion. If you have an opinion on it, let me know. Love to hear what works. I know a lot of people. I talked to my friend Billy this morning on the phone, and he said that he uses a Park chain cleaner, and he uses solvent in a Park chain cleaner. And that's another thing that you can do. You can also use, there are solvents out there, orange solvents, which are like household cleaners, which you can use, and that works pretty good too. There's a bunch of stuff you can do to clean your chain. But a clean chain certainly looks better. A clean chain is certainly, as it is lubricated properly, it certainly is quieter and more efficient, and it will last longer. So you know, it's be prepared to get a little dirty when you're cleaning your chain, but, you know, cleaning your chain is definitely a good thing to do. I would say moderate drivetrain cleaning is all you really, really need to do. And if you are like me and you monitor the amount of miles that you put on a chain and you replace your chain every 15 to 1800 miles or whatever your interval is, that's what works for me, then by the time it gets so dirty that it's, you know, disgusting, you can't deal with it anymore, or by the time you get to the point where it doesn't want to hold lubrication anymore because the chain has loosened up enough, that's another sign. I just toss the chain, put a new chain on. So that's the other solution. Anyway, that's it. That's my maintenance minute. I talked about chain cleaning, and that's what it was brought to me, as was a bicycle recently with a very dry chain. That's what brought and inspired this particular talk. So moving on, let's see. What do we have next? Oh, my goodness. It's the Vuelta. It's the Vuelta. It's the Vuelta. It's day 11 of the Vuelta. There was a rest day yesterday. There was a time trial the day before. The time trial was critical, absolutely critical. The time trial is, let's see here, let me get this one right. So let's take a really good look at Jumbo Visma's Primo Roglic. He is an excellent time trial rider, and he was the big favorite to win the individual time trial, and he took and take the lead of the 2019 Vuelta a España. He's a Slovenian, and he was by far the fastest on the difficult and technical course over to Pau in southern France. Roglic now leads the Spanish Grand Tour by 1:52 from world champion second place Alejandro Valverde from Movistar. Nairo Quintana, who was holding the red jersey, is 3 minutes behind right now. He got destroyed in the time trial. Nairo's got to learn how to ride a time trial. He's got to figure that out. And I don't know if you can figure it out. I was never a strong time trial rider. I always complained it was because of my size, and yet I see small people that can go really, really fast on their bicycles in a time trial. So I think that there's a couple of things going on here. It's obviously there's a mind over matter thing that is essential to becoming a very, very good time trialist. Holding the position and just, I guess, sucking it up and dealing with the pain, because it hurts. It hurts. It's not an easy thing to do. And also keeping your focus and keeping your cadence where you want it to be and all that. So so anyway, that's what's going on. And today we are moving on to other places. And so today we are actually, I have it sitting over here. This is, today is 80 kilometers, short, 180 kilometers, and it's got a couple of category threes, it's got a category two, it's kind of a lumpy ride, I'm going to say, and that's what we're looking at today. It is happening right now, or may have happened right now by the time that this broadcast is out, so I'm not really sure exactly where it is, but that's, the Vuelta is heating up. The climbs are ridiculous. They're really, really steep. They've been famous for this anyway. There was a really cool thing. I was listening to one of my favorite, I'm going to call it video cast, I guess it would be on YouTube, the Global Cycling Network. I love those guys. They were interviewing all the riders and were asking them, which is the hardest of the three Grand Tours, because we've got the Giro, and then we've got the Tour de France, and then we have, of course, the Vuelta a España. And there's a lot of people that say that the Vuelta is the one that is the most kick-butt of them all. But then again, the argument is then there's the Giro, because of the time and the weather and the craziness that goes on. You're going over mountain peaks with 12-foot plowed out roads that are wet and slippery and dangerous. You know, the Giro has their stuff too. And of course, the Giro has the really, really steep climbs, as well as the Vuelta having the really, really steep climbs. Then comes the Tour de France, which is kind of sitting right in the middle of it all. And one of the riders said, you know, of all the rides, of all the Grand Tours, as far as ease of physical ease of the ride, the Tour is definitely the easiest of all three. But he said, as far as the mental stress, the Tour is the hardest. The Tour de France is the hardest, because the amount of pressure and media coverage that's on the Tour de France is so much higher level than it is with the other two, that there's a lot of stress involved in doing that. So I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, you don't really think of these things, but that's a thing for sure. So I also was doing some research, and I saw that the steeper these climbs are getting, the more the technology is starting to make a change. And our folks at SRAM have decided to get crazy, crazy, crazy with drivetrains and gearing on the bikes. So you're going to see a few things. First of all, the cyclocross world pretty much has all gone over. A lot of them are riding on single chain rings now. And there's enough of a spread in the back now to give them all the gears they will ever need. The road guys are and gals are all riding on you know, these bikes that are, they have a huge cog set in the back, big, big gears. The days of the old, what we used to call, old timers, you'll love this one, what we used to call the old corn cob, or otherwise known as a straight block freewheel, or, you know, so it only had one gear difference per gear in the back. And those are for the classic rides where you show up with your, you know, wires exposed bicycle and down tube shifters and wearing in your old wool shorts and your Dedo Pietros or your CDs with the nail-on cleats on the bottom.
What?
They have those rides. They really do. They have those rides. So it's a thing. Oh, my goodness. I'm not looking. I can't peek. There's some things going on right now. I'm just getting news flashes on my computer screen right now. So anyway, the Vuelta is in action right now. It's really happening, and we got a lot of stuff going on right now. Rojlik is wearing the red jersey, the points jersey.
Really?
The points jersey is held by Nairo Quintana. And the polka dot jersey, the best climber, which is a blue polka dot jersey, not a red polka dot jersey.
Yes.
That's kind of fun. Uh-huh. Is held by A. Madrazo Ruiz. And the best young rider is M. Lopez Moreno.
Yeah.
And the number one team right now is the Movistar team. And the combative prize is going to Rojlik. He's a young guy. He's really powerful. He's got a lot of promise. We're gonna see more of this guy in the future.
Yeah.
A lot more of this guy in the future. So that's what's going on right now at the Vuelta. Pretty cool stuff. The route is... let's see, we're on stage 11. Don't they have, I have a site here which shows me all of these things. And it's just fun when you check it all out. But anyway, it's the Vuelta is definitely a happening thing. All you need to know about the route. Here we go. So today we are sitting at 180-kilometer route. Tomorrow will be 171.4-kilometer route. That'll be on Thursday. And let's see if we can find that in here and see how ugly that is. Some of these things are just, they're scary when you take a look at them. They're the ones that were over the weekend were just killer crazy climbs. Friday, September 6th. No, we want the September... This is stage 12 for tomorrow, 171 kilometers. This one looks like it's going to be just a fast. There's four category threes, but they're all really short. So this one's going to be a rollout. It's in the Basque Country, and it'll take on three short but tough category three climbs and in the last 40 kilometers before a fast run into the port city of Bilbao. And then Friday the 13th, things get ugly again. And we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4 category three climbs, 2 category two climbs, and 1 beyond category finish. And it is a wall. It's an absolute wall. It's 164.4-kilometer stage, and it has an uphill finish. And that one, it starts at 150 kilometers. 158. Starts at kilometer 158. It ends at kilometer 166. And it is literally a wall. It is a beyond category climb. It's ugly as all get out. And should be a very interesting day on Friday. So we'll see what happens there. Unlucky stage 13. It's going to be hard. 7 climbs, including a tough final ascent to Los Machucos, which last featured in 2017. The stage starts in Athletic Club's San Mames Stadium before heading out of Bilbao and taking on the 6 climbs before the summit finish. So that's going to be a killer on Friday. Saturday looks pretty flat and fast for the most part. A little bit of a break, 188 kilometers. And then Sunday, bang, here we go again. 154 kilometers, but there's a couple of category 3 category 1s, 4 category 1 climbs. Nasty stuff. So anyway, that's what's going on. And then that's Saturday. And then Sunday, again, another mountaintop finish. 144 kilometers. The mountaintop finish starts at 110 and ends at 144. So some good stuff going on right now in the Vuelta. If you're a Vuelta fan, if you're a bike racing fan, this is really, really exciting stuff. I am a little upset with the television coverage situation here in the U.S. I paid for some television coverage and I am not getting it. And so I'm not super happy about that. Guess I bought the wrong one. There's a bunch of different ways of looking at bike racing, and I grabbed the wrong one. So I think if you got NBC Sports Gold, I think you're still okay, and you can still see most of the races. But anyway, so that's what's going on out there in Spain right now. Some good stuff happening. One other thing I wanted to bring up, and this is something that we've been talking about for a while, the possibility of this, There's a very, very good chance that we could have a full South American sweep of all three Grand Tours this year. We'll see what happens. Rajalik has definitely put a twist on it. He's riding really strong. Will he be able to hold out on some of these nasty, really steep finishes? There are 8 mountaintop finishes in the Vuelta this year, 8 of them. That's pretty ugly stuff. So those are all leg breakers. They're just nasty, nasty things to do, and they're going to be leg breakers, and they're going to be tough. So, anyway, to be continued. We'll talk more about it next week as we get deeper into it. Okay, here we go. This is from a site called Pez Cycling News, and the article is Cycling, Good Health and Life Expectancy. Okay, so there's the question. Is riding your bicycle going to make you healthier? Well, there are some positives and negatives here, obviously. Driving an F1 car is not particularly a healthy thing to do. And, you might have some trouble there. But, riding your bicycle could be just as dangerous at times. So you have that little issue there. So will riding your bicycle decrease your risk for major illness and help you live to the ripe old age, right? Well, yes and no. So there's an awesome picture here also in this site, and it's a picture of the late Felice Gimondi and Eddie Merckx. And Felice looks like he's in pretty good shape. Eddie looks like he's carrying a couple extra pounds on him. But yeah. it's a neat picture. And
Eddie looks like he likes his food.
Eddie does like his food. He does. He's always liked his food. He's always been a little bit, he was on the large side when he was racing his bike. He was probably not the smallest rider out there. That's why he used to climb like the little guys, and everyone was always amazed at Eddie. But Eddie had a lot of things that were amazing about him.
He's probably a genetic freak.
He is. Yeah. He is. But you got to give him credit for what he did, too. I mean, the man would hop on a train and ride 100 miles away on the train, hop on the train, and ride home.
Yeah.
Hop off the train and then ride his bicycle home.
Let's do that.
That was like a thing he would do.
I would like to do that.
We could do that. We could take the Montrealer up to like Brattleboro or something like that. Okay. And then we could hop off and ride home from there.
Okay.
We could do that.
Sounds good.
That is a thing you can do. And I know people have taken it all the way to Montreal and ridden back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, it's So what's happened over the years? Global life expectancy has doubled. Global life expectancy has doubled since 1900. But while we're living longer, we're living sicker. The top three global killers are associated with cardiovascular disease, while physical, they're all associated with that. While physical inactivity is a primary cause of most chronic ailments.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. Does cycling, so the question is, does cycling make us immune to the negative impact of sedentary behavior? Okay, this person writes, I ride my bike multiple times a week. I hear you cry, surely I'm immune to the effects of sedentary behavior.
Nope.
I used to believe the same thing, but the evidence suggests otherwise. Many road cyclists are weekend warriors. You know who you are out there. You know who you are. Who spend a majority of their days pursuing relative sedentary knowledge work. Unfortunately, it appears that we can't out-exercise our desk jockey lifestyles.
Right.
Very interesting. In 2009, researchers studied 17,000 people aged between 18 and 90 years old. They found a dose-response relationship between sitting time and dying from anything. Perhaps more significantly, they found that this risk was independent of overall physical activity levels. It doesn't matter how active you are. If you sit down for long periods, you are increasing your risk for chronic disease. I have to stand up right now.
That's infuriating.
Okay, I'm up, I'm down. I'm better now. frightening, isn't it? So the findings have been supported by a number of other studies. Those of us sitting for 11 hours or more per day are at greatest risk, regardless of how much physical activity we do. Wow. No matter how much you do, sitting for 6 hours per day versus 3 hours significantly elevates our risk of death. especially from cardiovascular disease in both men and women.
I want to be a housewife.
Yeah, but you can't sit around all day if you're a housewife, right?
I wouldn't.
I know you wouldn't. I'm teasing you. So it is a great shot of Francisco Mosier riding the cobbles at age 68.
Oh, my.
Isn't that great?
Yes, and he's riding the cobbles. What kind of tires does he have?
He's just riding on regular road tires.
Yeah. How wide are they?
You know, probably like 25s. Oh. I don't know. They don't look too huge.
But what width are the tires on my Bianchi?
Which Bianchi? You have two?
Right. The road bike.
The road bike has 28C tires.
That's great.
I have graduated both of us over to 28C clinchers.
Nice.
So that's what we're doing. If I'm not riding my tubulars, I'm riding 28C clinchers.
And then
my cross bike, I'm riding 32
what does my
C's.
Cross bike have?
Yours are wider. Yours
oh, good.
Are yours are I think that yours are 38s.
That's
I think,
good
on your bike. So they're pretty hefty. They're very, very hefty.
We'll get a good test to their heftiness on Saturday.
Right. I can't wait. We're going to talk about that towards the end of the show here.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring that up again because, I'm really excited about that. I can't wait. I think they're going to show me some roads I may not have been on before. I'm very, very excited to see if that happens, because if it does, you've really done something if you can put pedal and run on a road he's never been on and it's in his backyard. That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
That's always a challenge.
Yes.
So how long do you spend sitting?
Typical
knowledge worker. I like this knowledge worker statement. That's great. Someone who manages information for a living rather than doing manual work spends 8 hours in the office, 45 minutes commuting to work each way, and a significant amount of their free time watching TV or surfing the internet.
Wow.
The majority of their day is spent sitting, even if they worked out hard on their turbo trainer for 60 minutes in the morning.
Wow.
Take a moment and consider how long you spend sitting each day. Simply moving more and moving more regularly throughout the day, even if you have to set an alarm to remind yourself to stand up and walk around now and then, can have a powerful influence on reducing the risk of disease, death, and improving quality of life.
I just realized something that in the course of my patient care day, I get up at least every half hour or more because it's the whole office visit is not spent sitting because
right.
Part of the office visit, I have to go out and collect the patient and then then I sit down and then we sit and we talk and then I have to do physical exam.
You have to walk them over to the scale.
Right.
And so you're not always sitting.
No, during patient care portion
right.
of the day, but then charting portion of the day.
Right.
But then all I have to do there, I mean, there's nobody. There's no reason why I could stand up as much as I can. One of the things that I'll do is if I'm sitting at my desk charting, I'll do what seems like sort of an inefficient thing, but I have chart work to do. And, at the end of the patient care day, I have to chart the patients that I saw, and then I have to do chart work for labs and questions and concerns, and I have a bunch of charts that I have to deal with. What I can do is when I complete one chart, I can then go move it to its next destination, which is either going to be it's ready to be filed or it goes to the front desk. And I can do that after each chart so that I'm not sitting all the time. I should just really do that. And then I'm not – I don't really have the I'm sitting for hours on end thing at all because I do get up every half hour. If it's a new patient, I'm going to sit for a little bit longer, but that it's always punctuated by, collecting the patient, bringing them back, doing the physical exam. Yeah, so – anyway, so the thing is, if you have a good office culture where you're allowed to stand up, just stand up every half hour, just stand up and stretch every half hour, and nobody's going to stop you from doing that. I would never stop my staff from doing that.
Right.
And of course, here at the University of Connecticut, people have standing desks. There are places where. People
they have them right here in our WHUS
yes.
offices. Yes,
yes.
I see them standing. I see the office folks. I see them standing up often over
yes.
there, which is a really great idea.
Yeah.
Really is. When we had a shout out to Scott Livingston, because I'm trying to coerce him to come back on the show. There's a little teaser right there. When he came to my show and was on the show, he didn't sit down. He stood up. He put the mic up high, and he stood and he talked to me. He talked to me, and you were away. This was that show I did when you weren't here, and he stood right over here where I am. But he stood up, And I said, don't you want to take a seat? And you said, no. He said, I prefer to just try to stand up as much as I can during the day.
No.
Which is great. And this is a guy who's, you know, on his bike a lot.
Yeah.
He runs a lot. He rides his bike a lot. He's got a lot of, you know, he certainly has a good reason to sit down.
Yeah.
and take a load off, so to speak. But no, he prefers to stand up.
So here's an interesting piece. I would contend that there's a difference between sitting around and relaxing versus sitting doing work while stressed. Because that's very different. If I'm sitting and chilling out, you know, if I'm just reading a book or if I'm watching TV and I'm not watching, you know, the footage of Hurricane Dorian, I'm not particularly stressed. I'm sitting there relaxing. So I'm going to relax my muscles. I'm going to put myself into a position that's optimal for relaxation, and it's not optimized for getting work done. When I am getting work done, I'm sort of in fight or flight. I mean, not extremely, but I'm sort of in fight or flight. So I've got the fight or flight hormones going, and you've got that situation where you're stressed and you're not using your fight or flight hormones, to run away from the bear. You're using them to, you know, do your chart work or do your statistics or do your accounting or whatever it is that you're doing at your desk. And you're not using the hormones for what they were intended for. And the thing is, cortisol is a catabolic hormone. It breaks down tissue. So when you are sitting still and you have cortisol on board, it's not going to be there. You're not going to be like putting the sugar into your blood and then using it to run away from the bear. And you're not going to be breaking down your muscle tissue or whatever tissue to put sugar into your blood so you can keep going. You're putting sugar into your blood, which is then going to raise your insulin because the sugar's not being used. Mm-hmm. And now you've got an inflammation situation. So I contend that this hours of sitting problem should be refined to refer to sitting while stressed, because sitting while stressed is a lot worse for you than sitting while relaxing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, doing anything while stressed is probably not great.
No, but when you're on your bike, you're kicking out the same hormones and they're doing the same thing, but you're using the sugar that's being put into your blood to go to do your activity. You have the same hormonal situation because your body doesn't know that you're running away from a bear versus sitting in a chair. It just knows that you're stressed. And so it kicks out cortisol, and that cortisol puts the sugar into your blood, which leads to an inflammatory situation, which is going to increase your risk of cardiovascular disease, cancer, all kinds of illnesses. I think that's why the sitting reduces your life expectancy. Now, mind you, if you sit for relaxation and you don't get a lot of physical activity, that's not good for you either.
No.
But there's a huge difference between sitting in a recliner and relaxing and reading a book than sitting at your computer getting your work done. One is very stressful and one is actually relaxing.
Totally. Yeah, you're definitely doing the heavy stress load if you got the computer in front of you.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because naps are good for you. So, I mean,
that I like naps.
And you're sitting still when you're napping, and that's good for you.
I've come to enjoy naps more than I used to.
Yeah.
I do like them. They feel good.
Well, there are countries where everybody naps.
Nap is a requirement, almost.
Well, and Spain, where your vuelta is, that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Everything closes down between, 1 to 3 in the afternoon, something like that?
Siesta.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yep.
And many, many European countries do that. Not the Anglo ones, which is too bad.
So I caught this little piece from the UCI. This came through my bicycle retail and industry news site and magazine from the bike industry. And it's a UCI press release. And the UCI, of course, is the International Governing Body of Cycling, the United Cyclists Internationale, as it's known. UCI has the pleasure of revealing the results of a public consultation on the appeal of road cycling conducted on the 10th through the 16th of July. The consultation marked the first phase of a process that aims to enhance the appeal of road cycling. It included a series of interviews with people from cycling's various extended families and discussions involving a working group made up of some 20 team representatives, riders, and road cycling organizers, as well as representatives of the media, broadcasters, and sponsors. The public consultation generated a great deal of interest with more than 22,300 fans from 134 countries on the five continents expressing their opinion on the current state of road cycling and the expectations with regard to its future development. The first observation to be made is that a large number of the participants are active cyclists. Okay, obviously, we're kind of preaching to the choir here a little bit. 62% of them ride a bike for recreational purposes, with 27% saying they race and 21% stating that they ride bikes to get to work. This is good. This is very, very good. Cycling enjoys a generally good image among the participants, which is a cause for satisfaction. Most of them associate it with positive terms such as excitement, 58%, bravery, 56%, excelling oneself, 50%, heroes, 37%, respect, 37%, and nature, 34%. Some 70% of fans also believe that road cycling is easy to understand, and 2/3 feel that the rules are not too complicated. That's good. This is good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's no surprise that the vast majority of the participants say that they were very interested in road races. 84% of them say that they are excited to follow. Many of them, 50%, regret the fact that the outcome of the races is predictable. Yeah, Team Enos. I said it. Fans believe that the appeal of road cycling lies first and foremost in the attitude of the riders and the characteristics of the events. Although there are some aspects that reduce this appeal, the three aspects most commonly mentioned are earpieces, the use of power meters by riders, earpieces 48%, power meters by riders 40%, and the variations in budgets and teams 39%. So anyway, there's just a ton of information here, and it's kind of interesting. It talks about television coverage and all that, and I'll probably touch base on this one again another time, because I got a few more things I'd like to talk about before we end the show here today. But anyway, it's kind of a cool thing. It's I obviously, Fran and I are very much we do love our road bicycles. We do love riding on the road, and we have an awfully good time of it. We had an awesome ride this past weekend, too. Oh, my God. It was a great ride. I had a whole bunch of people show up. I had 17 riders on my ride this weekend. 17. That's it. That's a small crowd. And, of course, it was a very, we have all different levels of riders that show up on these rides. So you never know what you're going to get. So, anyway, it was a good weekend. It was definitely a good weekend. Everyone was just incredibly
well behaved. I went to two country stores.
You did. Fran did a remote ride this weekend out in the
Barkhamsted.
By Barkhamsted, Connecticut.
Yes.
And went up into Massachusetts, right?
Yes.
And then back down.
We did the camel hump ride.
Right, which is apparently a pretty popular ride.
Yeah.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
And it's got a fair bit of climbing on it, but a really nice descent.
Oh, my goodness. It's very doable. It's called the camel hump because there's a set of climbs. You go up, you climb all the way up to Southfield, Mass, and you go to the Southfield General Store, and it's a very cute general store, and there's lots of pastries and goodies to eat and stuff. And then you go descend a little bit, and then you go over another ridge, and then you go screaming back down to Barkhamsted, and it's like miles and miles and miles of net descent. It's pretty incredible, where you're going 20 plus miles an hour for a long time, and you actually have to use your descending skills on very long stretches of road. It's pretty amazing. So that was pretty fun. And then so we parked at Whittemore Recreation Area, which is a couple miles from the Riverton, the center of Riverton. Riverton is a little section of Barkhamsted. That's beautiful downtown Barkhamsted. So there's a general store there that serves sandwiches and stuff. So we went back after we were done the ride and had some sandwiches. It was great. It was just really nice. The weather was absolutely perfect. It was on the cool side, like high 60s, low 70s. Gorgeous.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. It's great. This is a great time of year to be out riding your bike. It's just an awesome, awesome time of year to ride. Speaking of which, we're going to move on to a few other things. I'm going to mention a couple things. First of all, there was a 10% tariff that was going in on bicycle-related items, helmets and lights and various other things, and that was going to happen on September 1st. Well, it got bumped up to 15%. Thank you very much, current administration, for once again, you know, giving the... you know, penalizing a cyclist or someone who is in the health and fitness business, or the possibility that they might actually be in a part of their lives where they are going to commute and they're going to not use fossil fuels, you know, all the positive things that go along with cycling. And we are going to be, the consumer will be the one who is penalized for this by the current tariffs that are going on with our current administration. I can't even begin to tell you how I feel about that. I think you guys got the general idea. Next week, I will try to cover on two things that I was planning on talking about today, but we have run out of time. Why cyclists love that post-ride beer. Yeah. And the benefits of e-bikes. Again, here we go. Yet another article that came out on the 2nd of September. And how do fitness levels of e-bikers compare to those who ride regularly? There's very, very interesting results here. I have been a big fan of e-bikes. I believe that, you know, I used to be very snobby about it, but I have completely changed my feeling about e-bikes. And we'll talk a little bit more about that next week when we get things going. There is a beer brewery, Deschutes Brewery, which is in Bend, Oregon, and it has just released a cyclocross-themed North American IPA called Hand Up. The limited edition brew marked Deschutes' sponsorship of Virginia's Blue Ridge Go Cross race held last weekend. So this brew also honors Deschutes' co-owner and cyclocross enthusiast Colby Nightingale, who lost his life to pancreatic cancer in 2018. $1 per barrel of from all the nationwide Hand Up IPA sales will be donated to nonprofit organizations that support pancreatic cancer research. They also at the Go Cross event, Deschutes also planned to serve a limited edition beer called Go Cross Podium IPA. So, yep, even the beer people are getting into the whole cyclocross thing. Cyclocross is so cool. It's such a cool thing. Anyway, and that will bring us to tonight in Rocky Hill. The Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series is on. This will be the second week of the Cyclocross Series. So go on out to Rocky Hill. Check it out. If you're in any way curious about cross, this is a great way to get started. It's a training race. It's very low-key. For some, and then there are some that take it to the next level, but that's okay. It's just a really cool thing, and it is, again, tonight. Check with bikereg.com, and you will find all your information for it there. Other things that are going on here, coming up, this is a big one. This weekend, Ashford Gravel Grinder. Your old pal, Peddlin' Ron and Peddlin' Fran will be out there for the Ashford Adventure Ride of Gravel Ride. There's a 40-mile ride and a 66-mile ride. And they're promising me some roads that I may not have seen before, which I'm really excited to see. So, again, that is, I think we're getting down to the 11th hour as far as sign up for that. So go to Bike Reg, sign up for that if you want to pre-register for it. And maybe save yourself a couple of bucks by doing that. The CCAP Oyster Cross Training Series in Norwalk is also coming up on August 27th. August 27th. There was another one after that. There's a whole series. I think that is also going to be either last night or it's this evening. So there's lots of cyclocross training races going on too. Tons of stuff to do. It's that time of year. There's going to be more. Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross right here in our backyard will be on October 12th at Mansfield Hollow State Park. It is a classic. It is one of the oldest cyclocross races in New England, started by me back in 1983. We'll have more information on that in the future. Again, if you want to know more about it, you can just reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you've got a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.